Welcome to This is Palestine. I'm Deanna Butu. As we begin this podcast, Sheikh Khadr Adnan, father of eight, is on his 73rd day of hunger strike, demanding his release from an Israeli prison where he's been held without charge or trial since February 5th of this year. His condition is critical. This is neither his first hunger strike, it's his sixth, but it is his longest. His wife fears that he will die. We spoke with him before this latest detention. He told us about his decisions to hunger strike, how the Israelis have tried to break him over the years, and about his periods of detention. In today's episode, we examine hunger strikes as a tool of resistance. We hear the accounts of former Palestinian political prisoners, Khadr Adnan and Qaddura Faris, who describe why they and others have been forced to engage in hunger strikes to achieve the most basic of rights. We also speak with Dr. Malika Shwek, a lecturer at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. Dr. Malika has done extensive research on Palestinian political prisoners. Since the start of Israel's military occupation in 1967, Israel has used imprisonment as a means to criminalize political and cultural expression, to deny the freedom of association and movement, and to quash any resistance to Israel's military rule. Journalists, activists, men, women, and children have all seen the inside of Israel's prisons. It's estimated that 20% of the entire Palestinian population of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, and 40% of the male population, has at one point in time been imprisoned by Israel. This is staggering when compared to other countries, namely the United States, which, despite the high rate of incarceration there, does not even come close to Israel's rates of imprisonment. In 2022, Israel arrested more than 7,000 Palestinians. And as of March of 2023, 4,800 Palestinians remain imprisoned in Israeli jails, including 170 children, and over 1,000 being held without charge or trial under an odd and very sanitized label of, quote, administrative detention, unquote. We'll talk more about that later on in the podcast. Now, human rights organizations have long documented Israel's brutal treatment of Palestinian political prisoners, from the use of kangaroo courts in a different language, being Hebrew, to poor prison conditions, to the use of solitary confinement, to the lack of family visits and medical negligence, among others. Most recently, Israel's minister in charge of public security, a man named Itamar Ben-Gvir, announced that he was restricting showers to Palestinian political prisoners to effectively once a week, and that he was barring fresh bread from being given to them too. But while Israel's prison conditions have long been criticized by the UN and by human rights organizations, these conditions continue, with Palestinians literally using their bodies to demand freedom or death. We begin with Qaddura Faris. Qaddura is the head of the Palestinian Prisoner Society, Nad al-Asir, a group that provides support to Palestinian political prisoners. Qaddura is a fountain of information about Palestine, about political prisoners and hunger strikes, having been in and out of prison for many years, starting in 1981. He tells me that through hunger strikes, one can get a glimpse into the situation that Palestinian political prisoners face and how Palestinians have had to use their bodies, once again, literally, to push for these rights.
A hunger strike became a tool for resistance and reclaiming your rights. Things started to develop here and there, and then became more organized by the prisoners. Prisoners realized that organizing their work as a collective can be significant.
He tells me that prior to embarking on hunger strikes, prisoners held awareness sessions to examine strikes in Northern Ireland and in other countries. Most of the early strikes, up to the year 2000, were collective protests involving many prisoners and spanning different prisons simultaneously. Prisoners established prisoners' committees and collectively demanded rights. He tells me that the first collective hunger strike began in 1968, just months after the start of Israel's military occupation, with prisoners demanding that they no longer be forced to address Israeli prison officials with the term Yesidi, meaning my lord in Arabic. From there, he tells me that prisoners went on strike to demand pencils to be able to write letters to loved ones, books to be able to read, and even mattresses to sleep on.
During the first strikes, the prisoners thought they had achieved something, and all the Israelis did was give them a comb for their hair. They felt degraded, and they continued to strike for another 20 days to be able to get mattresses to sleep on. The hunger strikers pushed to have pencils and papers. Palestinians were not allowed to have pencils. It was like drugs. We used to smuggle them in. From the kitchen, we used to take wax paper to write on. Then we demanded books. The way for you to achieve rights with the least amount of danger is a collective hunger strike.
Now, unable to control these hunger strikes, Kadura relates how the Israelis started to deal with hunger strikes, including through a process of force feeding.
The third major hunger strike was in 1980. The Nafha hunger strike lasted for 33 days. There were two martyrs who died from the force feeding. The Israelis punctured their lungs. Ali Jafari and Rassam Halawa. The third, Ishaq Maracha, they saved, but he died 2 years later from the damage of the force feeding. However, they understood the importance of the collective in striking. During this hunger strike, the lawyer Felicia Langer and other human rights organizations appealed to the High Supreme Court to put an end to the force feeding.
But while hunger strikes were once collective, today's hunger strikes are mostly now individual and are mostly aimed at challenging the process of administrative detention. Now, administrative detention is a procedure in which Palestinians can be held in prison indefinitely, in 6-month stints, but indefinitely and without ever being charged with a crime. According to Damir, Israel's now holding more than 1,016 Palestinians, again, without charge or trial. This is the highest number since the year 2003. Israeli courts, of course, are of no help. The courts have never released a single Palestinian held under administrative detention. Administrative detention is deemed to be a preventative arrest. The evidence against them is never heard. Even their lawyers aren't allowed to see evidence, aside from a brief summary of a few sentences describing the suspicions against them. Now, because of the lack of an effective court system or the ability to be released, Palestinians resort to hunger strikes. This is the story of Khadr Adnan. Sheikh Khadr Adnan is a baker running a small bakery in a town near Jenin. He's the father of 8 children. For more than 30 years, the Israeli army has targeted Khadr Adnan, imprisoning him more than 12 times, mostly without charge or trial. To speak to Sheikh Khadr Adnan, we went to his village of Arrabi, about 10 minutes south of Jenin. Across from his home are murals with depictions of Jerusalem and of the 6 Palestinian political prisoners who dug their way to freedom in September 2021. Sheikh Khadr Adnan began his political activism as a student in Bir Zeit in the late 1990s. His first arrest and subsequent hunger strike was in 1999 when he was arrested by the Palestinian Authority. That hunger strike lasted 12 days. Soon thereafter, he was taken by the Israeli army and launched a series of hunger strikes, including in 2004 for 25 days to protest his isolation, in 2012 for 66 days, in 2015 for 56 days, in 2018 for 58 days, in 2021 for 25 days. He's now on his 73rd day. For each of these strikes, Khadr Adnan was able to obtain his freedom and confront his jailer, breaking the chains of arbitrary administrative detention. Sheikh Khadr Adnan tells me that he had, quote, no choice, unquote, but to go on hunger strike.
I did not want to live in a prison. I was not born in a prison. I started to get sick in my stomach. I would lay in my cell and vomit this yellow bile coming out of my stomach and intestines. I would not call the warden to come. The next day they came to check on me, and they asked me what happened and wanted to check my body. Of course, I did not accept their help. This refusal is part of being on hunger strike.
And he tells me that as his condition worsened, that the Israeli prison authorities tried in vain to get him to stop his hunger strike. Remember, at this point, force feeding is no longer permitted. It's a form of torture. So instead, the Israeli prison authorities resorted to other methods. Oftentimes, they used the family to try to get the hunger striker to break his strike. But in Sheikh Khadr Adnan's case, it was different.
I asked the Sheikh, who are you with? I told him you are coming with the occupiers. The Sheikh was from Al Umri Mosque in Lid. I asked him, why did you come? He said, I came on the request of the Islamic movement, and that is it against Islam to be on a hunger strike. I told him it's not haram. It was the first time the occupiers are asking them for their services to get me to end my hunger strike. They told me, both the Jewish and Muslim religious figures, that what I'm doing is haram and like committing suicide, especially the Jewish ones. They said that what I'm doing is haram. They brought me an Arab doctor who tried to give me vitamins.
Over time, the Israeli prison system has adapted to hunger strikers in an attempt to break them and to prevent them from putting a spotlight on Israel's prison system. As Dr. Melika tells me, the gains from these collective actions have diminished over time. The more recent pattern has seen multiple individual hunger strikes conducted mainly in the hope of securing release from prison. In practically all cases, the Israeli authorities' agreements to meet the hunger strikers' demands are reversed at a later stage. But while the demands are reversed at a later stage, Palestinian hunger strikers continue to serve as a model for other struggles. For example, in 1981, the IRA, the Irish Republican Army, modeled their hunger strikes on the Palestinian experience. Similarly, Palestinians inspired the Kurdish hunger strikers in the 1980s and 1990s. In this way, as Dr. Melika notes, the body is the battlefield for a hunger strike, with the aim to try to bring international attention to life under oppression and force people to confront the choice of living in freedom and dignity or choosing death instead. In your interviews with them, did they describe to you what happens to their bodies?
That's a brilliant question. So it's so important first to say that the body of the prisoner is not the weapon itself. It's more of like a battlefield. It's the physical dimension that is used to carry the philosophical meaning of hunger striking. And this is why, especially when there are protests for hunger strikers, you see and you hear the word soul a lot, because they rely on the soul probably as much as they rely on the body, if not more. And this is what, you know, kind of like push them to the edge sometimes. So the soul is so important in the context of hunger striking. And this is why you see, you know, prisoners who are not necessarily physically able to go for hunger strike, but they still do it because they, of course, they believe in the power of striking. But also, like I've mentioned before, a life that is not dignified is a life that is not worth living for them.
Thank you for listening to This is Palestine, a podcast brought to you by the Institute for Middle East Understanding. The IMEU is a nonprofit focused on giving you access to untold stories, facts, and expert sources on all things Palestine. For more information, please visit our website at www.imeu.org and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at the IMEU. Please don't forget to subscribe. I'm Deanna Butu. Thanks for listening.